Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
One more case to talk about this this morning. Before anyone knew his name, David Anthony Burke was a kid recording music on an iPhone in his sister's closet in Houston. By 20, prosecutors allege he's responsible for the death of a 14-year-old girl, the alleged dismemberment of her body, and a cover-up that reportedly lasted months. The question underneath everything in this case, what made him? Not the moment it allegedly went wrong, the years before that, the specific conditions of his life that reportedly combined into something no one saw coming. Siobhan Scott is with us to help break it down. Siobhan, David Anthony Burke, he was raised in a household where the only music allowed was gospel until he was 13. And we know the type of music that he ended up making. It ain't gospel. But brought up strictly very religious. Then the internet blew open the doors, and these very non-gospel music started coming out, eventually making music about romantic homicide. Nobody in his life is reportedly helping him process any of it, really. When a kid goes from that level of a sexual and cultural restriction straight into the unfiltered digital world that apparently he went into, and you still, I would imagine, if your family is very strictly and staunchly religious, they're probably not changing their belief system just because you found the internet or video games. I mean, what does that turn into here? Because he's not learning it from his parents, school, or peers. He appears to have emulated some of these ideas or got some of these ideas from the games he's playing or the music that he was listening to that was outside of the realm of the very strict world that he was in. It's like the floodgates open and suddenly you have access to everything. That's kind of probably a dangerous place for a young, impressionable mind that doesn't really have any sort of tools to navigate it properly.
Yeah. And you know, a couple things popped into my head, two thoughts. Let me not lose them both. Okay. One is that sometimes families are very overtly religious, but there's a hidden dark side, you know, and we see all these people with these religious, I mean, politicians, highly religious, and, you know, I don't need to even name all the names.
Duggars.
Yeah, I was going to, what I was thinking.
Robin will name the names.
Yeah, but there's creepy hidden stuff going on that kids may be aware of. So there could be some of that. The other piece is that kids often raised in really repressive religious homes go opposite. The minute they turn into teenagers, I had one client who was raised very strict Mormon. Her mother wouldn't allow her to wear a bathing suit as a little girl. I mean, everything was so controlled, no television. And what did she do at 13? She ran off to LA to become a hooker. And I had her as a client a few years later. So you can have that oppositional effect too. But adolescence is the period of brain sculpting where identity, values, integrity, empathy, where this really develops. And if you're spending, I mean, I know he was doing homeschool. How much time in homeschool was actually spent online, you know, with parents not really paying attention, which is also very common. And we know that online life technology shapes social development. It shapes values. it shapes identity. And he certainly went off track somewhere.
So Siobhan, I'm going to kind of flip an optic potentially and ask you this. So let's do glass half full with the parents, that they weren't hiding in the darkness with their religiosity, their extreme religiosity, if that's what they had. But they was really what it was on the surface. And he hit that point where David wanted to kind of rebel against that, like we've seen in places like the Duggars and other cult-like mentalities. But what's the likelihood then that he can then recruit the parents based on greed? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. I think IBLP, I think, you know, Jim Bob had the greatest of intentions when he did that, but he got caught up in the almighty dollar and then started turning a blind eye to the abhorrent behaviors of his abusing one accused and one convicted sons. You know, is that a possibility? Have you seen that happen where greed overwhelms the religiosity?
You know, I have not typically run into it personally with my cases, but I think in the media, when we see these awful outcomes and the whole influencer culture, it's definitely having a huge impact when people are getting this kind of money and a sense of power, you know, that goes with it from their kids' behavior. And also going back to not terribly psychologically insightful and not coming from a place of integrity with, you know, what is this doing to my kid? It's like they just don't get it. They're missing some pieces.
No critical thinking again for the win. Mm-hmm.
Well, and especially with the integrity and values, because if you're being brought up in a culture that is super strict, like you can only listen to gospel music, and I'm sure there's other restrictions that are reminiscent of that surrounding that, and you're held in this cage of we're doing it because we have integrity and these are our values. And then suddenly, he gets into music. And then the person who has also been sitting there telling you and being so strict on what you can and can't consume starts seeing, again, this is my conjecture, that looks like it might be a little lucrative over there. Oh, look, he's making a little bit of money. Look, mm-hmm. he's getting a little bit of attention mm-hmm. over there at that. Mm-hmm. And then that person that instilled those values into you, and maybe you still believe them or not, but you're exploring the outside world yourself with your own autonomy. And then that person that still represents kind of the base, the rock, if you will, of the integrity and the values that raise you that way, is suddenly kind of also being like, that's okay. I'm going to encourage this now. You're like encouraging the same shit that it was like, this is the outside world. We don't participate, you know, with all those folks, is now kind of about it. That to me, I think would make one have questions about their own sense of integrity and values. If the people who are closest to you and have shaped you and you viewed as being kind of rock solid turn out to be quite moldable, a lot more like silly putty than a solid rock of values, if you will, which then as you're trying to form your own values, I would think make those even probably more dangerously moldable because you don't have guardrails. You're just basing everything off of what you've been taught in your home your whole life so far. I'm wondering how much of the playing fast and loose with the morality rules from the parental standpoint then had an effect on David and in a way indirectly enabled him to find a path of going on Amazon and buying a burn cage and two chainsaws as a solution to the problem of the 13-year-old he knocked up, allegedly.
Yeah. The greed, I think, not only from parents, but the people around him who were, you know, his entourage and people trying to latch on to his fame, that does pollute thinking, and it's unfortunate, but again, a lot of people don't have insight. They're not monitoring themselves, and it also means when people were making money or saw the promise of gaining money and power from him, they're not confronting problematic behavior anymore, and it's sort of like he gains, as a young person who's, you know, really got poor judgment and lack of integrity, nobody's challenging him, and
when you're brought up with that level of strict outlook on life, the religiosity and such of fire and brimstone. This is horrible if you participate in it, blah, 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 blah. And then you do cross into the world of the sinners and you're doing some things that are not good. And you've been told it's instilled in you of just how horrible the consequences are to your actions that you know that you have participated in. Does that fuel the motor even more to cover up a murder, to do more things to conceal, to protect, to hide, because of the shame that might be instilled in you for all those years of everything that you were taught, and also to protect from the inner shame you may have, but then the shame of those finding out around you that were the religious figures that you are now letting down? I'm wondering how much of all of that has a fueling effect to this story, if he did it.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I know based upon my hyper-religious upbringing, I would never, even consider murdering someone and cutting their body up. But but that's just me. I would kind of lean toward maybe he never bought into it.
Okay.
That, there are there are kids raised, young people raised in homes where there's that kind of family going on. But really from the get-go, they're rejecting it. They may be playing the game and going along with the parents, but it's never really integrated into them as part of their reality.
And I think, to the fueling part, I think David, again, innocent until proven guilty, is so broken as the nature part, that the nurture part was just fueling it. Because there's, I know, I'm just going to cite one example of someone who seemed to make that transition fine. You can have your own personal opinion. But Katy Perry, her father was a pastor. She grew up in a very religious household, and she made that transition just fine, and kind of rejected that lifestyle and didn't go out murdering people and had enough checks and balances because she wasn't broken to begin with. And so I really think David is just a very, very broken individual, from the nature part, and then the nurture kept throwing kerosene on this thing. And then the greed kicked in. And then we really saw how well linked, again, pure conjecture, the parents were to their religiosity. I can't even say that word. Because then the mother's like managing the money and taking everything in her name. I mean, so if they were so rejecting of the things he was doing because of their religion, why were they so closely bound to it? Anyway, just interesting.
I think that's the question. Yeah, I mean, it's a question. I mean, they have been fighting off with subpoenas or some, I forget what it was, with the grand jury for quite some time. And I get it. I mean, you're going to want to insulate yourself, whether you have anything to hide or not, because anything can be used against you. But I don't know. At the same point, too, if you don't have much to hide, I don't know. There's a lot of questions here, and it's a lot of things where I'm not going to the parents and going, you're responsible for this. But I think there's a lot of shame, I think, that would probably naturally happen to anybody if your kid goes out and does this. Whether you were a good parent or a bad parent, you're going to be looking for every possible thing. Did I cause this? Did I do something wrong that may have driven them to do this or that? And you may be able to put your finger on it and go, shit. It was the extreme religiosity or whatever it may be. You can go, well, I was totally wrong there. This is horrible. This is how this affected that person. It's not how you intended or what you thought it would be, but it in fact is, it is the result, the cause and effect, whether you intended it or not, as so many things in life are.
Look how different this is, because we just covered the Anna Kepner case where, the son accused of killing his stepsister and the parents, whoop, we're done with you. And this one, son's accused of killing 13-year-old, and the parents are like, not doing that. Interesting, isn't it, always?
Yeah, I think there's some are somewhat similar overlaps, though, too, of insular behavior and
controlling narratives.
Controlling the narrative. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're human. They're going to do it. Not saying it's wrong, but it certainly, I think, would lead to more answers about where these people come from and what's in the recipe.
Where they come from.
What are the seven herbs and spices that made up this person?
Another family. I would love to have everybody in a room and go over the family history and watch the way they interact with each other and what stories they tell that explain all this. And again, it makes me think of people who are not terribly insightful.
Siobhan, you would have the best reality show of all times if you could if we could set you up in a room with all these families and call it Family Therapy Live.
I'd be up for that. I would be up
with
for
all,
that.
With yeah. or Nutter's Live, something like that. Just
what would be the most telling way to figure out the dynamics of these people in a room without like putting them on the spot, without asking questions where they're going to lock up? Would it be like playing a game like Monopoly or something and just observing the interactions? I think that would be very telling.
What's Siobhan's opening gambit? What does she put out there first?
How would you bamboozle people to find out what's going on in their brains, Siobhan?
No, I would just, you find so much from people. Tell me the story. Yeah. Tell me the story of your family. And you can pretty much tell who's got a different story from who else's story. You can see who dominates. Yeah. You can see the rationalizations. And just letting people talk. You know, you make a safe space for them to open up and talk. You don't really give feedback when you're gathering data. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot like law enforcement. If you
it's exactly what we do when we're interviewing anyone. Yeah. We're building sources. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, just get them talking, and I take notes on everything people say, and you start to see patterns.
Yeah. It's another fascinating case. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in with your thoughts. All right. That's going to wrap up this edition of the program. Siobhan's latest book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Go check it out. And also available on audiobook. And Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me, also available wherever you get books, also available on audiobook.
And we both read it too. And I smile every time you mention Siobhan's because I love that book so much.
Yes.
And yours is very, very useful.
Go and check them all out. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.